survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
No Tenderfoot here tonight, just me and my guest, Michael Klein. Hey, welcome to the show. Hey, check our website out at preppingacademy.com, preppingacademy.com, and sign up for our mailing list, and we will not spam you. But it's just me and Michael Klein. I've had Michael on before. I think you were a quick fill-in one night when my guest didn't call in, and I called you and said, hey, could you talk about SDR? You remember that, Michael?
I do. I was listening to the show, and you're like, you know, I need help. And I was like, okay, hang on. And I was like, I had to hurry up and get done what I was doing and get to where I could get my phone and call in.
Yep. So you there, Michael? I'm making some switches over here on my computer.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Sure. But tell them about your show and how they can listen to that. And then we'll get into the meat of what I really wanted to have you on my show for.
Okay, well, so I run a podcast. I actually got my inspiration from Forrest. He used to run a podcast called the Prepping Academy on a website, and I thought that was kind of cool and had the opportunity to jump on there and start a podcast. And I thought, okay, well, we'll do this a few times. And almost a year and 3-4 months later, I'm still doing it. So my podcast is actually called Reality Check. And so if you go to prepperbroadcasting.com/reality-check, you'll see it. Or you could just go to prepperbroadcasting.com and look for Friday nights, and you'll see Reality Check. I have a live show every Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and you can jump on there. If you want to try to find me on Facebook, you can look up Reality Check Studios on Facebook, and it should get you there. So, yeah, that's my show.
And also in your show, you have live chat, too, where people can literally ask you questions while you're doing the show, correct?
Yeah, so I actually encourage people to get in there and harass me real time. There is actually a chat room that you can join. If you go to that website, theprepperbroadcasting.com, there is actually a chat. You can join it anonymously. You don't have to put your real name or contact information in there. And I do read the chats. In fact, a lot of times people will make comments, and I'll just have to stop the show to laugh and just have to catch my breath because they completely stop the show sometimes. And if you make a snark comment in there, I'm going to read it aloud on the air.
Yep, that's true. So, yeah, it's a good show. It's I know that you spent a lot of time with sanitation the last few shows, which is I learned a lot by listening to them for sure.
So, yeah, we have two more shows on that coming up. So we had a little bump in the road these last few weeks, but we will pick that up. Our next live show will be on food sanitation, and then the next one after that will be on like laundry and how to keep your house clean. So it was a 4-part series. We still have to do parts 3 and 4. Had a little bit of an interruption in the live shows the last 2 weeks.
And that's what we want to talk about is your interruption. So the reason I wanted Mike on the show, Michael, is mostly because he was on our ZelloNet the other night, and he was telling us about what was going on in Florida. He actually has some family members that were at Ground Zero at Mexico Beach, and he had some insight that some of the first insight I've heard of what really goes on down there immediately after a disaster. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And Michael, without telling us, I mean, too much of your family, but you had a large part of your family down at Ground Zero there, correct?
Correct. So I am originally from North Florida. My wife is originally from North Florida. We're from the panhandle. So the Bay County, Gulf County, Jackson County, Calhoun County, Washington County, Holmes County, that area. If you look on a map in the area, basically where the eye wall came ashore and went up through Florida, that's where everybody I know lives and works. All of my relatives, all of my wife's relatives, all of my childhood friends, pretty much everybody lives there. In fact, the only people that aren't in Florida are me and her, and that's because we moved to South Carolina. So when the storm came on shore, part of my family was in the western eye wall, part of the family was in the eastern eye wall, and part of the family had the eye go directly over them. And in the first, that hit on a Wednesday afternoon, immediately after the storm was passed, you know, we start trying to get in touch with people. And so that's kind of what, you know, once we knew everybody was at least alive, then that started, okay, well, we want to start making some lists and kind of do some lessons learned. And there's been some prepping stuff that I thought I was prepared for, and technically I am up here, but not to be able to, you know, do a remote kind of thing to go anywhere. So I can go through kind of a quick timeline and then go into lessons learned, or I can just go into lessons learned, however you want to do it.
Hey man, this is all about your experience and your family and what's going and what happened. And we want to learn the lessons, but the timeline would be great as well. Literally, I wanted you on my show to listen to what you had to say and your experience with your family down there. And let me ask you this: before it happened, were your family members preppers?
No. So one of my family members thinks they are a prepper. They're kind of prepper minded. They had the supplies at their house. Unfortunately, they never made it to their house. So okay. One of my first things is don't keep all your preps in one basket, because that one basket could get blown away. So having a cache, having preps in different cities is one of the things that we learned. So I can go through the timeline real quick. So Wednesday,
okay.
We knew the storm was coming in. For those that were in Panama City and the area, they've all dealt with Category 3s. That's no big deal to anyone. I mean, you know, if you could, a Floridian facing a Category 3 storm is like Jack Sparrow on the front of the Black Pearl. You know,
right.
they look at a Category 3 like it's no big deal. And this storm strengthened very quickly. And the problem, the reason why a lot of people didn't evacuate, my family included, is because if you were awake at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you would have seen the alerts and you would have had time. But by 6 o'clock, when basically everybody was waking up, the winds were too strong to cross the bridges. Your car would have been blown off the bridge and you would have wound up in the bay. So by daylight, pretty much everybody was locked in to where they were going to be, number one. And number two, nobody had ever had anything like this happen before. I mean, a Category 4 has really and truly never hit that part of Florida. If it had been a Cat 3, I wouldn't be here, you know, talking about this tonight. So anyway,
right.
The storm comes in Wednesday afternoon, goes through. Of course, everybody loses cell phones, everybody loses power and whatnot. And then we start trying to make phone calls. Well, we were able to contact one family member. That afternoon, they still had cell service, and they were able to check in and say, yes, they were okay. Later that night, we were able to get up with another one. There were two of my family members that were out of town, and they were okay, but they had family that was at home that they were trying to get home to. And I think it was Friday afternoon, somewhere around Friday, that we finally got accounted for everybody, that we were able to get up with everybody via cell phone, and everybody was okay. And there actually was cell service down there. It was very spotty and it was very sporadic, but they did actually have some cell phone service in the affected area. So I'll get the comms a little bit later on, but
okay,
we were able to use the cell phone. So that was, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was just basically trying to find everybody to make sure everybody was in fact alive. Saturdays and Sunday, we were trying to think how we could get down there to take supplies, because we have everything. You know, my wife and I, we're preppers. We prepared for this kind of thing. We had the food. We had water. We had solar. We had, you know, a portable propane hot water heater so that we could do hot showers and everything that everybody would need. The only problem is I have no way to get it to Florida. So our first dilemma was that we have supplies, but we have no way of getting it to anybody. And so that was a huge mental strife on my part and on my wife's part, where, you know, we could go save our family and help them, but we just can't get to them. And it was a good thing that we didn't go because the roads were completely blocked anywhere. If anybody has ever lived through a tornado, or if anybody's ever seen a tornado on TV, that's the destruction they have. So you imagine a Category 4 storm in this case, which it was only two miles away from being a Cat 5. So you might as well call it pretty much a Cat 5 that made landfall. I mean, that's an EF2, EF3 tornado. So you imagine an EF3 tornado 80 miles wide and lasting for 6 hours. That's what hit Florida. So it wasn't just, yes, it was a hurricane, but you think of it in terms of like a tornado. A tornado does a lot of damage. And, you know, it was 80 miles. So you couldn't go, you know, if you were on one side, if you were in the middle, you had to go 80 miles one way or the other, or 40 miles one way or the other to get somewhere that wasn't affected. And that's 80 miles east, 80 miles west, and 80 miles north if you're on the coast. So, you know, driving out is not going to be an issue. Several of the family members didn't fill up their cars. They don't keep full tanks of gas because gas is always available anywhere you go. Go ahead.
No, that's right. I mean, people that don't have the mindset, they just don't think like that.
Yeah. So people don't... you know, people don't naturally think, you know, keep a full tank of gas. Don't let it get below half a tank. Keep a bag of stuff in your car, that kind of thing. So that was our first hurdle, was that nobody had anything. Nobody was really prepared for the storm. People were able to get out and leave. Some of them were able to get out and leave. Some of them weren't. And so that's what we were been dealing with the first few days. And then the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday after that, we were trying to find places for people to live. So trying to find hotels and whatnot, because up here we have internet, so we can call, we can make reservations, we can put, you know, the rooms on a card and whatnot and say so-and-so's coming to stay. And then when they show up, they've got a bed, air conditioning, a hot shower, and, you know, a roof over their head. A lot of people didn't have that, but us being the way we were, we know how to effectively use the internet and, you know, I use my Google Foo to get things and line stuff up for my family. So after about six days, everybody was, you know, pretty well settled and had, you know, what they needed just to survive the next day. Now, granted, nobody had a bath. Everybody was stinking from no power. The mosquitoes were horrible, that kind of thing. But at least everybody was safe. Once everything has kind of settled down, and then last Saturday morning, we were actually able to pack up and go down there. And so we took extra bottles of propane, gallons of gasoline, frozen jugs of water, canned food, that kind of thing, just to replenish supplies. By the time we got down there, there were a few gas stations that were open. They had fuel, maybe not on a consistent basis, but they had fuel like every other day. They had places that were giving ice. There was, you know, plenty of places that came in and supplied stuff, and then all the power trucks coming in from everywhere. And so one of the things that people might could get lulled into is that they see this happening and they're like, you know, okay, it doesn't matter if there's a disaster somewhere, everybody's going to come help me. And that's true if it's a localized disaster. But if it was like the entire Southeast that had a problem, the response would have been a lot lower and there wouldn't have been as many supplies pouring in because everybody would have been, you know, kind of for themselves. And then Sunday, when we got back last Sunday, we found out that one of the relatives had power. I found out today another relative has got power. One of the relatives has found an apartment to move into. One of the relatives has moved in with us up here in South Carolina, and they're just going to start a new life up here because everything's gone in Panama City where they were. And then I got one more relative that I think is still waiting on to try to get power. So all in all, you know, let's see here. Today is the 24th, so we're thinking, 2 weeks maybe? So thinking 10 days, 11 days, somewhere in there, whatever it is, that it's taken people to get their stuff back. So that hit on like a 10th, so 5, yeah, basically 10. Might as well call it 12 days by the time it's done, said and done. People have kind of got what they need as far as being able to survive, food, water, shelter, that kind of thing. But it's taken that many days for it to come in. And so the biggest thing that I have is that you need to be able to survive on your own in your house for 10 days or more. In a lot of cases, there were so many trees down that people were literally trapped in their home and they couldn't get out of the home. It wasn't that they could open the door and walk out and call for help, or crawl out and call for help, is they were either trapped in the home or had trees down on the home and couldn't get out. So you need to be able to survive in your house or wherever you're going to be for at least 10 days, because, you know, neighbors are going to come help you depending on your area, but the government's not. FEMA came in and everybody was like, great, FEMA's here. You know, we can get money, we can get supplies. And FEMA, I actually have the video where they were on WGHG TV saying, we're not here to help the citizens. We're here to establish government again. We're here to help the state.
Wow.
We're here to do continuity of government. And it makes sense. I mean, the federal government doesn't really need to help the citizens. What the federal government is going to do is they're going to try to establish the local government, the state government, and then that will then turn around and help the citizens. So, you know, you think about it, that's continuity of government. And that's exactly what they did, is they didn't hand out stuff for citizens. They didn't hand out free money. They handed out things to get the state and the local governments and the local police and the local fire up and going. And then they let those local agencies handle the people. And eventually supplies showed up, but a lot of it was from private donations. It wasn't from the government per se. And also with the FEMA aid, you got to read the fine print, because if you're not careful, a FEMA handout is actually a loan, and your loan payment is your tax return for the next few years. So
yeah, you said that. Let me ask you this: when they, and you may know, you may not. So a lot of people will get FEMA money, and you're saying that's a loan. What happens when FEMA, does FEMA actually pay for their hotel or their trailer that they are put up in, or do you have to pay that back as well? Because don't you remember? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, at Katrina, they had a lot of trailers that people went and stayed. And I'm wondering, you know, if FEMA tried to get that money from them, you know, the people staying there as well.
I don't know. I can only speak from my family's experience, from what I've heard from the people that did it. So when my family members tried to apply for benefits or try to apply for FEMA aid, they were told basically you make too much money, because they pulled their tax records and they said, well, you have a job, you have insurance, you paid in X number of dollars, you don't need our assistance. I do have one family member that's on SNAP benefits, and they're basically on welfare. They would qualify to get that kind of stuff because they don't have anything. FEMA knows they don't have anything, so they're going to hand out, you know, they're going to get the doles.
Gotcha.
But if you are middle class and slightly well off, they're going to say, you know, you take care of yourself. And the first thing they're going to say is go to your insurance. If you have insurance, they're not going to deal with you. They're going to turn you over to the insurance company. And the insurance company, that's what they're for. And the insurance company should be giving you a check for a hotel, giving you a check for rent, that kind of thing. That's part of your policy. Or at least
so
it
let me
should
ask
be
you this.
Policy.
Okay, ground zero day, you know, hour 9, 8 after the storm goes through, the sun comes out and people are looking at the damage. Is there food on the streets by organizations and water for people, or does that take a few more days to get in?
That took a few days. So I don't remember exactly. I'd have to look back at my text to see exactly what time when those started coming in. Relief pretty much started trying to come in immediately after the winds died down. So the winds died down Wednesday afternoon. Thursday, people started trying to come in. But the problem was Thursday, there were so many trees down, nobody could get in. So, excuse me, it took people cutting with chainsaws, trying to get into the counties, and people with chainsaws trying to get out of the counties to clear the road. And even then it was like only one lanes. So even if everybody had been ready to go sitting at the state line, it wouldn't have happened because there were so many trees in the way that there were no roads to get in. So it was physically impassable to get into the stuff. And so that took a day or two to get cleared out. If the roads had been cleared, you probably would have started seeing supplies coming in as early as Sunday. But usually by Monday or Tuesday, most of the roads were clear. The National Guard was starting to show up. People were starting to help each other, that kind of thing. So I call it at least 4 days, 5 days before help started showing up. And then it's just gotten more and more ever since.
Who were the agencies you saw first or that were down there first?
Neighbors.
Neighbors, okay, after
neighbors. I never saw the Red Cross, and I didn't see FEMA. I saw doctor's offices, and I saw churches with water and stuff. I did see the Salvation Army eventually, but I never saw the Red Cross. I never saw FEMA until I think we were on the way out, and I saw one of the trucks I passed. So as far as, like, state agencies and, you know, the common donate to us kind of thing, the Salvation Army was the only one that I saw. But the churches had their stuff together. The Southern Baptist disaster, I saw their trucks. But it was neighbors helping neighbors, and it was people that had giving to people that didn't. So yep. It was the community helping the community. It wasn't the government coming in, or it wasn't Red Cross coming in. Now, not to say Red Cross is bad, because they do wonderful work, but they didn't get there, you know, for a couple of days.
So food and water, I guess, is a major. Well, the three things, I guess, afterwards is food, water, and communications. So let's first talk about food and water. So you're saying maybe 5 days before any meals came in, or like MREs or hot meals or anything?
Yeah, so I would say 5 days if we want to split hairs on it. I would say 5 days before any other kind of assistance came in. The hot meals were very much in short supply. And okay. One of the problems was people would set up going, you know, okay, well, we're going to set up here on the corner of the street and we're going to give out hot meals and supplies, but there's no way for anybody to say anything unless it's spread by word of mouth. There was some cell service, so there was some Facebook posts, but if you didn't have Facebook or if you didn't have a cell phone, then you didn't know to go get food and gas from a certain location.
So, okay. That's a quick question on that. What Facebook sites were important while that was going on? Was it like the local town Facebook site? Or was it a hashtag? What's the most important, or how were people getting that information through the social medias? I mean, I'm just wondering.
So it was friends seeing the post from friends.
Okay.
So I had two or three friends that were down there that I keep up with, and I was watching their posts. Eventually there was a Facebook page created for my home county that's basically X County Disaster Assistance Facebook page. And then everybody kind of started joining that. And then once the word got out that, you know, that's the central place, everybody then started using that as the bulletin board. But it's still friends helping friends and word of mouth. There was no, the city page didn't show anything. The county page didn't show anything. The state pages didn't show anything. It was a neighbor saw it and they posted it on their page, or they told somebody who posted it on their page, that kind of thing. So it's very much word of mouth, very much neighbors communicating to each other.
Gotcha. And how about shelters? Did any of your members, family members go to like a shelter, a FEMA shelter or any type of shelter?
No. All but one of my, two of my family members lost their house, but two of them, the house was damaged, but they decided to stay in it. Shelters are fine if you've lost everything and you have absolutely nothing. But the thing about shelters is you have no privacy. Your space is your little bunk and what's underneath it. And there's no security, number one. Number two, you're not guaranteed to be in a shelter in your hometown. So let's take Panama City, for example. If they've got 5 shelters and those 5 shelters are absolutely full and they get 100 people that absolutely have to have a bed, they'll either turn them away or they're going to put them on a bus and they send them over to Lake City, which was happening. They opened Red Cross and FEMA and whatnot, opened shelters in Pensacola and Tallahassee and Lake City. And they put people on buses and shipped them over to those shelters in different cities. Now, if you've lost everything and you have nothing, then that's fine because you have a place to sleep. You have 3 meals a day. You have, you know, a way to use the bathroom and get water and all your needs are met. You're just not in your hometown anymore. And for some people that's okay. And for some people it's not. So it's, you know, you flip a coin, but none of my family went to shelters. Although a lot of people did, a lot of people stayed and slept in their cars and they're still living out of their cars. I saw, you know, families of 4 living in a sedan on the side of the road outside of their house that was, you know, completely smashed.
Wow. That's crazy. So, So, and the shelters, and you shared some information about the shelters the other day that was, I don't know, it's disturbing to me. And it makes sense about once you get into a shelter, they don't like to let you out because then you could be, there's curfews. And so once you're in the shelter, you're kind of there for the duration, a period of time, correct?
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. So if you're thinking about it from the government's point of view, all conspiracy theory aside, their job is to protect human life. They don't care how or what or creature comforts. Their idea is to keep souls alive. And so from their point of view, it's you are in a safe place. You're being fed. You have all your needs met. We don't want to let you leave because if you leave, then you don't have anything to protect you, number one, or you could trip and fall in a hole and that would screw up our death toll numbers. So a lot of times they don't really like for you to leave the shelter, number one, or there is a curfew and they expect you to be back in at the end of the day so they can, you know, check your name off the box that you're back in the thing. And it's a safety thing. But in the same token, if you want to put your tinfoil hat on, if it's something really bad, they could just close the door and lock it and nobody would be able to leave. And they would, again, say, you know, this is for your own good. It's for your protection. This is, you know, if you go outside, you're going to get hurt. And that may be true, but some people say, well, I want to go home and check on my house. You know, all of my grandmother's stuff is in there. I don't want the looters to get it. And their response is too bad. You know, it's just stuff. We have to protect the human being. Material things can be replaced, and that's hard for some people to grasp. And so that's why a lot of people don't go to shelters, is because they'd rather stay at home with their stuff, would stay with stuff that's familiar to them, than they would be to be a refugee, basically.
So did the law enforcement allow people to sleep in their cars, sleep in tents on their own property? Because I read a story about a unit went down there to help with looting. I forgot the name of that organization. And they were arrested because they were out after curfew. I can't remember the name. Yeah.
The curfew is no joke. If you are caught outside, if you're caught off your property, if you're caught, you know, out on the streets, after curfew, you are arrested if you're not shot. They really had no problem shooting people in the back. You're not ever going to see that on the news, but many, many looters were shot and killed down in Bay County and in Mexico Beach as well, in Gulf County. Yeah, if you're ever in that situation, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it be earthquake, tornado, or hurricane, or EMP. If there's a curfew, the police mean what they say. So if you're outside of your house, I don't know if you're on your property, you're probably okay. But if you're definitely out walking around on the streets, then you're going to get arrested for sure. And you're going to spend the night in jail. That absolutely happened. A friend of mine, one of my relatives, needed to go to the hospital and they were transported via ambulance over to Pensacola that had power and water and whatnot. The relatives of the one relative were left at the hospital and the police told them, basically, you have, you know, curfew starts in 8 minutes. You have 8 minutes to get home or you will be arrested. And one of the relatives said, well, I'm a former spur. Here's my badge. And they basically said, we don't care. We don't recognize any of that. You're a human being out after dark. You will be arrested, period. We don't care if you're the president, kind of thing. And so curfew is no joke. If you're in your car next to your property, or if you're sleeping outside of your house, they're probably not going to mess with you. What they're more concerned with is people running through other people's yards and people out on the streets, basically looking like they're not supposed to be there. That's kind of what the curfew's for, and that's what they're looking at.
Gotcha. Okay, because there was some people, they went down to help stop the looting, and they were actually arrested. It's one of the organizations about that, you know, they defend the Constitution. A lot of police officers are in it. I forgot the name of the organization, but anyway, they were actually arrested because they didn't approve it. Next question: information. What was going on with information down there? how was it? Go ahead.
So for most part, information was being shared on Facebook, and a lot of what we found was bogus. Either somebody heard something and they put it on Facebook, and then when people went to go actually go to a certain place, the supplies weren't there, or people were just bogusly doing it that didn't even live in the affected area. They were just doing it just to cause trouble. They would write out on a piece of paper or something and take a picture of it and post it, or they would post it under a false name saying, you know, free supplies and water at this location from this time to this time, and then people would go there looking for it, and it wouldn't be there. So disinformation and just rumors and rumor control was a huge problem. It's gotten better in the past few days, but starting off, yeah, the control of information and I won't say false and fake information, but just uneducated information was a huge problem, because people, you know, you've got, let's say you've got a quarter of a tank of fuel in your car. If you're going to get out and drive 20 miles, that's pretty much a one-way trip. And so if you've got information that a gas station is open at this location, and you get out and you make the 20-mile trip only to find out the gas station no longer exists, you're basically stranded at that gas station because you don't have enough fuel to get home or get anywhere else. So that was a big, big problem, which is where, you know, communications can come in. If you have reliable communications and you could have someone on the ground, they're going, yes, this gas station is open. Yes, they have power and fuel. You know, that would be a lot better. And so that started happening more and more, again, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on text messaging and word of mouth. I did take a radio with me, but I did not hear a lot of health and welfare traffic. Once I got down there and was listening to some of the ham frequencies, a lot of what I was hearing was just normal rag chew of, hey, how are you doing? I'm doing good. Yeah, we're sitting over here. Da-da-da-da-da. There wasn't a lot of information shared, because part of it is that's not a really big prepper community down there. A lot of the people in that area are just good old boys and rednecks, and, you know, this kind of stuff doesn't come to mind for them. So they're not going to be organized. If that event had happened in Carolina, we would have been a lot, you know, we would have been able to control information a lot better, as far as having two-way radios and HF radios to hear, okay, something's here, let me go check it out. No, don't come here. And then the word spreads a little bit faster via Facebook, via social media, and as well as, you know, via two-way radio.
So how about in communication with your family, since they were, I mean, you had to rely on cell phones, but does do any of your family members now think that maybe ham or other forms of communications are important, and have they come to the dark side where they actually will start putting like 14 days worth of food back or anything like that?
No, they're not going to do that.
They're not.
The one family member that had stuff at home, yes, they know that they need a generator. They know they need, you know, solar powered stuff, because the batteries go dead after 2 or 3 days, but everybody else, no, they don't have that mindset. They're not going to have that mindset. And I've told them in the past that, you know, look, you need to have this kind of stuff. You need to think about this kind of thing. And it falls on deaf ears. And even now with the current situation, it's still, well, yeah, I guess I should have had that, but oh, well. And I say, well,
wow.
Are you going to get it when the power stuff comes back? Yeah, I guess I need to get something like that and think about it. And it's just, I lead a horse to water. So that's all I can say about it.
Wow. Okay.
Now, one other thing is, now I guarantee you there are some of my friends, one friend in particular, that has read 1 Second After, and they have read Patriots. And I managed to contact them. I said, so you've lived off grid for 10 days and you've read those books. What do you think? And they're like, I think this was pretty much a game plan. And so I suggest a few more books like the Going Home series and 299 Days and the Seven Cows.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Series. And they're like, yeah, this pretty much what happens in those books is what happens. So if you read prepper fiction, if you read 1 Second After, if you read 299, if you read the I-85 Chronicles, what happens in those books is really and truly what happens in real life. I mean, it's the game plan. If you read those books and you said, okay, if this is what's going to happen with society, then you're ahead of the game because you've got the playbook. You know what's going to happen. You can read at the end and go, yep, at the end, everything goes to heck. And that's really what happens.
And you, I noticed the other night you were talking on, and you said literally one of the most important things is people to be armed.
Yeah, so it was anytime that's gonna be a thing, you need to be armed. Whether you believe in guns or not, you need a way to defend yourself. Now, whether it's a baseball bat with nails, a stun gun, or pepper spray or whatever, you need a way to defend yourself because the criminals had a heyday. The looters were out literally hours after the event, even before the wind had died down. It was like early evening. As soon as it started getting dark out and the sun started set, people started looting. There started to be gunfire. So one of my relatives actually spent the night at his workplace because he couldn't get out of the building. He was trapped in the building. And he could hear gunfire all around the building. And some people were shooting just to shoot. Some people were shooting looters. Some looters were shooting people. There have actually been armed looters where people came in from Tallahassee. Some of the gangs came in from Tallahassee and some of the other, nefarious groups of people literally took it as a heyday to come prey on the weak. And they would load up with pistols and shotguns and they would go from house to house and they would just shoot people. And again, you're not going to hear that on the news, but they had to drag 37 dead people out of Callaway one day, one evening, just for that same thing. Again, you're not going to see those death toll numbers, and they're trying to keep the death toll numbers low. But like I know from a fact that one night, the death toll was 37 in one city and 11 in another city, and half of those were looters being shot by police and by citizens. And because again, you know, it's a bunch of rednecks and good old boys. And they don't, you know, those kind of people don't put up with that stuff. And so if you're looting, you're pretty much going to get lead poisoning. But yeah, looters and criminals very much took that event as a heyday. There was, in my dad's area, there was a two-time convicted armed felon that was out driving around. And some people pulled up behind him and he was trying to wave them around to go around him. And they didn't, and then he pulled out a gun, and they weren't armed, but they popped the car in reverse and backed up and, you know, got away, and then managed to call the police. The police managed to find the vehicle, trailed him, pulled him over, and, you know, turns out he was a two-time convicted felon. And so criminals are going to be out. You know, you think, oh, the neighbors are going to help neighbors, everybody's going to sing Kumbaya, and yeah, that does happen. But in the same time, you need to be able to put a bullet in somebody, and you need to be prepared mentally to kill someone if they come on your property in a threatening manner, if they come in your house in a threatening manner, because there's no doors after a disaster like that. There's no door. There's no windows. You know, half the houses are missing the front, and so if you're in your bed, there's no protection against someone just walking in on you. And so there were a lot of people that had to shoot somebody and kill somebody. Now, you need to shoot them in the front. Don't shoot them in the back, because if you shoot somebody in the back that's running away, you go to jail for manslaughter. But, yeah, you need to be armed. You need to be open carry. You need to be able to be trained, you know, well-versed with your weapon, so that if the need comes, you can draw, put the sights on target, and pull the trigger if need be. A lot of times people pull their weapon and the looter said, nope, I've got the wrong house.
Right, and that's where communities, a lot of times we say, hey, your survival group is not your neighborhood, it's not your cul-de-sac, because they don't think like we do, in a sense. It's hard to convert someone, but after the crap hits the fan, and you're protecting your home, you need to form groups within your neighbors and start protecting everyone's property there, for sure.
Yeah, and some of that were some of the communities that are way back in the woods that you have five or six families living down one dirt road. They did. They put up a sentry, and that sentry controlled people coming and going. And there were reports that I heard that, you know, that did happen, where you have a family or a trailer park that's a bunch of good, honest, hardworking, you know, country folk. And there's one road into the community, and they put up a sentry that's got an AR-15 or a shotgun or whatever. And anybody that comes by that goes to, you know, walk in or drive in, they stop them and go, you know, what's your business here? and they make sure that, you know, you see the finger on the trigger, you make sure the safety's off. They make, you know, they make sure they get the message across that if you're going to come here and stir up trouble, you're going to be buzzard food real quick. And that did happen. I don't have any firsthand accounts of that, but I know from hearsay that, that people were shot and people basically were drug off into the woods to be, you know, feed the wildlife.
Oh, I love it.
Unfortunately, it's a fact of life. You know, I don't cut stuff. I don't sugarcoat stuff.
Right.
I'll tell you exactly like it is. You know, in a disaster, you know, what you read in those books is exactly how it plays out, pretty much word for word.
Yeah, a lot of people say, well, that's just nonfiction. Well, it is, but it makes you think and you learn so much by reading them. And then,
yeah, and it's really wild because I've read most of those kind of books. I've read the stories, and it's like, you know, that's really nice and it's cool, but they all kind of have the same theme, is that, you know, society is going to go downhill. It's going to be really bad for a while, and then things will get better because people will pull together. And that's exactly what happens, is you have a disaster. The dregs of society come out. They, you know, try to have their heyday. People get enough of it. Everybody puts the looters and the criminals in check. And then the neighbors start helping neighbors, and everybody rebuilds. Now, whether that happens in 3 days or whether that happens in 3 years, that's kind of the cycle. But society absolutely crumbles to nothing. I mean, it's been said that we are three meals away from anarchy. And it's the absolute truth. When you have someone that has no electricity, they have, you know, there's no law enforcement coming, and they pretty much have the idea of whatever they can do. It's like the purge. It is literally like the movie Purge. People are going to do whatever they want to do because they know there's less chance of them getting caught. And those that are criminals, that are going to act like a criminal, they're going to do their thing. You cannot reason with evil. You cannot stop evil. The only thing evil understands is more evil. And that's usually at the end of a barrel of a gun.
Yep, I agree 100%, and that's why being armed is important. And I think, and you know, I think you'll agree with me, things are going to get worse for society, which means everyone across the board need to be more aware of their situation and their surroundings, and also be able to protect themselves and their family.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Well, no, what did you have to say?
I was going to say, I can run down my list real quick.
Yeah.
If you want to make some notes, but I'll just read off these. These are kind of just like thoughts that I've jotted down. But I'm gonna read these off real quick, and you can go back later and you know, think on them, or if you hear something, write it down, and then at the end you can ask me the questions. But my first one is, of course, be armed. You know, the criminals are going to have a heyday. The looters came out just hours after the event. Literally, before the winds died down, there was gunfire. Another one is no burning of yard trash. So you have all these trees down, and you think, well, I'm just going to start burning trash, and that can quickly spread, you know, fires to your neighbors. And even if you're not burning, your neighbor may be burning, or your neighbor may be trying to cook on open fire. And if the fire danger and everything's dry, then, you know, that can spread fires, which is going to be real bad because nobody's going to come put the water out. I've already said you need to be able to survive for 10 days. Another one is don't put all your preps in one basket. So if you're a prepper and you have your house, if your house gets blown away or damaged, then you've lost everything. So caches and having things maybe in a different city and having stuff in your car is a big, big plus. One kind of thing for hurricanes and tornado stuff is turn off your water and your gas and your electricity at the breaker. And this is important if you're on city utilities. We had two or three houses that I know of for friend of a friend that their water was turned on, or they had a sink turned on, and the neighbors got together, put a generator on a community well, gave everybody water, and then all of a sudden somebody's house floods and this ceiling caves in. And so the wind didn't get the house, but the neighbor turning the water on got the house. And same thing with, you know, natural gas in the breaker. You don't know what kind of damage is done. You know, that's going to be different if there's like a major natural disaster, you know, or an EMP or something, or a economic collapse. But if it's a tornado or a hurricane, just remember, you know, turn off your utilities. Water, water,
yep.
Water, water, water. You need 2 gallons of water a day just to drink. So one of the big things I saw was people needed water to drink, you needed water to cook, you needed water to bathe, and you needed water to flush the toilet. and then you needed more water to bathe with. And people, you know, I was under the impression of 2 gallons of water a day, and that's all we needed. And so I've saved up enough water for my family, you know, for it to last us several months. But those 2 gallons are not enough water to drink and cook and bathe and then possibly flush the toilet. So you need to have a way to store up a lot of water. You need to have a way to sterilize water, to clean water, which, by the way, I did a water filter death match, and Sawyer did come out on top. So I have to recommend the Sawyer water filters. They are the best ones.
Sweet.
And I can prove that with science.
Did you do the test of drinking urine?
No, I didn't. I didn't pee in it. I crapped in it and then filtered the water out of the poop and drank that.
Oh, great! Okay, awesome.
I looked at the micron levels and compared the vendors and compared the some of the scientific data that other countries had done. Like Britain did a study on Sawyer and Brita and Pure and Lifestraw, and Sawyer came out on top. You know, if you've got it, get a Sawyer and a Berkey water filter because those are the best ones. But have a way to store water, because just because you can get it doesn't mean you can actually store it. And so, you know, if you can get a 55-gallon drum or a 30-gallon barrel or even a trash can, you know, just some way where you can have water stored. Rainwater is the best. What we found out is that rivers and streams become polluted.
Mm.
One of my home counties decided that the wastewater treatment plant was about to overflow and they were going to have a problem. So they just pulled the lever and everything from the pipes, everything just dumped into one of the local rivers. Their problem was solved, but the 2 counties that are south of the 1 county had a problem because then now there was raw sewage in the rivers and the streams. So you cannot count on rivers and streams having water to drink. Again, you need to run it through a water filter. Because
if it's a
disastrous situation and you get botulism, that's not a good thing.
I never thought about that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Keep going.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't think about it, but a lot of times the wastewater treatment plants are connected to a river, and under normal times they treat everything, and what's dumped into the river may not be the best, but it's at least clean. But, you know, when nobody's looking and it's about to hit the fan reality, they just pull the lever and they dump the whole system. And then, you know, then they can let it fill back up. Because if there's no power to run the pumps, everything's going to fill up. And rather than having everything get full and overfill and cause a mess where they're at, they just pull the plug and let it drain into the river and then let Mother Nature deal with it. And like I said, that's fine for them, but not so much for those downstream. So you cannot count on rivers and streams being clean because you don't know what's run into them. And that could be chemicals from a farm or whatever. So another one is buckets and laundry detergent. And you want to make sure that your laundry detergent can dissolve in cold water. So there's a lot of laundry detergents that have to have hot water or warm water to dissolve. And you're not really going to have that. You don't really want to use all your fuel to heat up water just to do laundry. So if you can get laundry detergent that can be used with cold water, that's one thing. And then also ripstop or lightweight material, because jeans take too long to dry. So everybody has a pair of jeans and they're like, you know, my jeans are really tough, I'll just use my jeans, and that's great. But you either need to have multiple pairs of jeans or you need to have a plan, because jeans take a long time to dry. They take a long time to wash. Clothes get very dirty very quickly. So If you want a test, what you can do is put on a pair of jeans and take a cotton t-shirt and get someone to spray you down with water and then go jump in the dirt and wallow around for a few minutes, and then get somebody to spray you down with water and then go jump in the dirt and wallow around and then go hug a tree for a few minutes and then go run up and down the block 6 times. And that's kind of how dirty your clothes are going to be. Another one is a hot meal is a blessing. So canned food and MREs are great. You know, everybody needs to have non-perishable food, but that really gets bland after a few days. One of the best things in the world that I took down there were cans of Sterno, so that people could heat up. You know, they had cans of rice. They had, you know, chicken and rice and Campbell's soup and that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's room temperature, and that gets really, really boring after a while, and people get palate fatigue, you know, very, very quick. And, you know, people say palate fatigue. What is palate fatigue? Well, that is not a crate of camo. That's actually where you get tired of eating the same thing. And so being able to heat up something is a blessing. Hot meals are a blessing. The next one is Gatorade powder or some way to replace electrolytes. So everybody had, one of my relatives had water. They had jugs of water. And they were still having, they were starting to have problems. And we actually had taken a thing of Gatorade powder down there because I knew this was going to be an issue. I knew that my family didn't know about electrolytes. And they don't know, you know, that you may need to do lactated ringers or saline solution or something like that. So if you're going to be in that, throw a thing of Tang or a thing of Gatorade or Powerade or whatever in your prep so that you can mix Gatorade up with water in order to replace the salt and the electrolytes. And also don't do strenuous activities if water is limited. If you have limited access to water, don't get out and cut down a tree and cut it in half because you will actually lose a lot more water than you really think. And you drink. Number one, you're wasting your water. Number two, you're depleting your body of salts. So if you don't have a lot of access to water and salt, don't do a lot of strenuous activity. It really, truly can wait. Comms are needed. Now, I definitely recommend having an AM/FM radio, and this is a good place to do black echo. But people needed AM and FM radios for news, but also for mental stability. So we don't realize the background noise that we're exposed to every day. And it's not until there's a power outage or we go out in the middle of nowhere and just sit that we realize how much noise there is in our background. And when that goes away, your brain freaks out and you really start having mental problems from it. They're one of my family members right now. They're safe. They're in a house. They have everything they need. But they're going stir crazy because they don't have a TV or a radio. And so they had to actually go buy a TV and a pair of rabbit ears just to tune in a local station to have background noise because you literally go crazy if you can't hear other human beings. And so an AM/FM radio is a really good thing. Let me go through these other ones and we'll come back to Black Echo. So solar power. Solar power is a must. Now, I'm not talking about whole house generation. I'm talking about go to Harbor Freight, buy the $120 kit that's the solar panels and the little small charge controller and the two CFL lights because batteries run out. So people had flashlights, people had battery-powered fans, people had battery-powered lamps and stuff. And that's great for about 2 days, and then all that goes off after 2 days. And so you either need a way to charge your battery or you need something that's renewable. And so I have to recommend either solar powered lights or oil lamps or something like that. And I don't really recommend oil lamps unless you know what you're doing, because if you knock the thing over, you burn down the house, then you have a bigger problem. And again, nobody's going to come help you put the fire out. So I would recommend anybody that's looking to do that kind of thing, just go to Harbor Freight, buy the little kit. I think it's like $120, but it comes with three or four panels and two lights and a charge controller. You can charge your cell phone from it. You can charge an iPad from it. You can charge, you know, that kind of stuff. And so that would have been a huge force multiplier for my family if they'd have had that, because they would have had lights at night. They would have had a way to charge their devices. They could have plugged in a USB fan if they had it to run a fan at night. So I can't say that, you know, solar power is a must. And it's just because we're so dependent upon electricity. Now, if you're a survivalist and you eat bugs and love to live off the land and put mud on your face, then no, you don't need that kind of thing. But if you're like the rest of us and you're dependent upon Facebook, then I would say find some way to get a little small solar charger. Also, remember, there are no bathrooms. So there was a problem with people openly defecating in the streets and around their house. And some people had to dig latrines and cat holes. And as I'm driving around the street and I'm seeing this and I'm smelling it, I'm thinking, they didn't see my show on latrines. They should have listened to my show on latrines. But you have to remember, there's no bathrooms. Toilets are only going to flush once. So if you have a toilet and you have a way to get water, then you can be okay. If your house is gone, then you have to think about where you're going to use the bathroom and how you're going to deal with that, because that stuff doesn't go away overnight. It sits there for 3 or 4 days before it dries out enough.
And that is a solution that can be done for under like $10.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
you could have either a portable toilet, or you could just go get a 5 gallon bucket, a bunch of bags, and a pool noodle, and you could make a toilet. And so you line the Yeah, you line the 5-gallon bucket with a garbage bag. You use the pool noodle as a seat so that it's, you know, somewhat comfortable. You do what you got to do. Once three or four people have gone, or once you've gone, you know, four or five times and the bag's half full, you sack the bag up and you either put it away from the house or you dig a hole and you put the bag in the hole.
Exactly.
You need to,
yep.
You need to think about a way to deal with poop.
Okay.
So along those lines is the smell. Everything is going to smell dead. So one thing we noticed is there were tons of dead animals and buzzards. There were buzzards everywhere. In fact, you kind of wanted to keep moving because you were afraid that if you sat still for a minute, the buzzards were going to think you were one of them. Because the smell of death, and it's not just like humans. It's, you know, you think about it. There are raccoons and possums in these trees. The trees get snapped over. The animal doesn't have time to get out or roll out, and it gets crushed. And so there's dead deer, there's raccoons, there's birds, there's squirrels, there's, you know, all this kind of stuff that didn't make it out of the storm either. And, you know, they either died trying to leave or died when the trees fell on them. And so there were a lot of dead animals. And just everywhere you went, there was the smell of death and the smell of mold and something rotting. And then the last one I've got is keep a go bag in your car. Keep good hiking boots in your car. Of my family, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them had vehicles that were undamaged. So even though the house was gone, the vehicle, you know, maybe had a few dents, but, you know, you could crank the car and drive off. And that's what a lot of them did is they got in their car and they left the area to go somewhere else. If they'd have had a go bag in their car, if they'd have had, you know, a change of clothes and some food and some water in the car, they would have fared a lot better. One of my family members, when their house destroyed, they were in their night shorts and just had a pair of Crocs, and that's what they wore for 6 days until they could get somewhere to go into a Walmart to go buy clothes and buy a new pair of shoes. So having a bug out bag in your car is absolutely crucial. And that's the last thing I've got for that.
So, and you brought up one of mine and your favorite things, which is called Black Echo.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I saw a huge need for this. And so for the listeners that don't know what this is, Black Echo is a project that was started by Amron. John Jacob Schmidt talks about it a lot, but it's basically a pirate radio station. So the idea is that you get a FM transmitter or an AM transmitter and you have it in your bags. And if something happens, and the local radio station, the local TV stations are gone, which in Panama City they were. You know, the TV station towers got blown over, and so there was no TV, there was no radio. People were desperate for information. Black Echo allows you to put up an antenna and a radio and be able to give out news. And I thought, man, that would have been perfect. If I had had that and could have taken that to Florida, I could have set that up. And as I got reports of this station's got gas, this place is handing out food, I could have put that on the radio for people to hear. The other thing is with mine is I've got about 4 gigabytes of music on an MP3 player that I can just play that people will find that station because people will be looking for radio stations. You know, once all the radio stations go off the air and people get a radio, they're going to tune the dial. And, you know, if you're punching out 15 watts from an antenna on top of your house, you're going to be able to cover 10, maybe even 15 miles of area because you're not competing with any other signals, number one. And number two, you had line of sight because there were no trees. You can be a source of comfort to a lot of people because they can hear the music, they can hear your message, and then you can give them news and whatnot. And so that is, you know, as beforehand, I was thinking Black Echo was going to be a thing for, you know, oh, we can broadcast to the resistance and we're going to be able to get out news to the preppers and to our community and whatnot. But now I'm thinking we can really use this as a way to communicate where to go, what not to do. Like if an interstate is closed we hear about it and we can confirm it, then we can put it on the radio and you can just record it and make a loop. And you can say, you know, the following is a message as of, you know, 1800 hours on this day. Here are the latest places that have gas. Here are the latest places that have food. Here are places that are open. Here are places that are closed. If you need help, please go here. If you need this kind of help, please go here. That is all. And you just have that on the loop until you update it, or you could have it, you know, play three or four songs and then that. And I just thought that would have been awesome to have that kind of set up and running, because people would have found it, and then they would have had music that they could listen to, and that would have helped the mental aspects of it. And then I could have put news out there for people to, you know, hear, to go here for food and go here for water. And it worked out because people had Facebook, people had cell phone coverage that they could text. And granted, it was very, very limited, but it did work. But a Black Echo would have been, that would have been great to help everybody else. It might not have benefited me personally, but it would have benefited me mentally, because I would have known how much I'm helping people, that basically, you know, I'm the guiding light out there in the darkness, and people would be attracted to me and hear, and I could help people, you know, through the radio. So I'm very much thinking differently how I'm going to do my Black Echo now.
Sweet. And one of the last things that I wanted to bring up was, and I know you teach this, I teach this, we tell people about getting their important documents, because some people, their house, all they have is a concrete slab now, and everything they owned is gone. But have the important documents like on a thumb drive or even the iCloud, but, you know, and that would work in this particular scenario, but on a thumb drive would be pretty awesome, wouldn't it?
Right. So, I mean, this is kind of beating the dead horse, because we always say this, take all of your important documents, your driver's license, your Social Security card, your passport if you've got it, your marriage certificate, the deed to your house, the title to your car, any major receipts, you know, you buy a new refrigerator, or you bought a new TV, take that and scan it. Scan it to an image or scan it to a PDF, and then save that on a thumb drive that you keep with you, either on your person or in your bug out bag or at a safe location, not at a bank, because you won't be able to get to it if it's at a bank. You know, if you need to, take three or four and make copies of it and then stick it in a tube and put it in a drop location or something. And you can take video of your house. In fact, everybody should do this. Everybody should go and videotape what's in your house. You don't have to have exact values. You can just have a video and you say, here is a 36-inch TV, you know, a Seika or Lenovo or whatever. Here's my TV. Here's my laptop. Here's my stove. Here's my refrigerator. You know, here's what the outside of my house looks like. Just videotape all that kind of stuff for insurance, because it makes it so much easier that, you know, if you've got, like, for instance, with me, I've got all that information and I've got it in a safe downstairs. If a tornado hits the house, I wrote my address on the safe, because the idea was hopefully that this, the safe gets blown away, that somebody will see the address on the safe and they'll bring it back to me. But it could be, you know, all the papers be lost.
Right.
And then I can't prove who I am. I can't say, yes, I own my house. Yes, I own my car, because I don't have the physical paper for it anymore. Whereas if you have images of that scanned and saved on a thumb drive, and you have that thumb drive with you, if you go to the insurance company or FEMA or whoever, and they need papers, you can just hand them the drive and go, everything I need is on here. If you'll give me a second, I can give you copies, or I can email you the images or whatnot. And if you've got all your papers together and you've got all your stuff and you act like you know what you're doing, you get moved to the top of the line. Because if I'm an insurance agent, I would much rather deal with someone that has all their stuff together and is going to be an easy claim than I would dealing with someone that's hysterical and doesn't have anything. You know, everybody's going to get served, but you may get served a little quicker if you can make, you know, the agent's life easier, because they're humans. Everybody's human. And if you acknowledge, you know, hey, look, I appreciate what you're doing. I know it's really tough. There's a lot of people that are trying to make claims. Here's all my information on, you know, on a thumb drive or on a CD that you can look through. They're going to really, really appreciate you doing that. And they may bump you up to the top of the line. So, yeah, you know, document what you've got and then take all your documents and either put it in the cloud or put it on a thumb drive, and don't keep the thumb drive in a safety deposit box, because you won't get it when you need it.
True. Yeah, the banks, yeah, probably wouldn't open for a couple of weeks afterwards.
Yeah, no, the banks are all still closed down there for the most part.
Oh, are they? Wow.
If they're still standing.
Oh, true. There's so many lessons to be learned, and yet – it's for the rest of the country, it's like it's over and they've recovered. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've really had a problem with is like when Florence hit and we were responding to the floods in Florence, you know, at the time when you're on Zillow and you're watching the chat and everything's coming through and you're trying to forward the information through, you're part of it and you feel bad for the people. But then a day or two later, you know, the Zillow chats shut down and you go on about your life and everything's good because you've got power and air conditioning and you go out to Chili's or Olive Garden that night and have a meal and no big deal. Whereas the people that you've just rescued are, you know, they're now in a shelter, they have no home or the home is flooded. And we as humans have a real bad problem of forgetting, you know, that a lot of people are dealing with stuff. And I've really had to deal with that. And I've actually had a lot of depression and I've had a lot of anger towards people up here because they don't know that, you know, I'm from Florida. They don't know that I've got family that I'm dealing with. And, you know, they're all happy and cheerful. And I'm like, how can you be happy and cheerful? People are dying down on the coast. And it's just, they either don't know or they saw it on the Weather Channel and then they changed the channel and it was out of sight, out of mind. And
right.
Unfortunately, you know, I am very much guilty of that myself. I've been guilty of that many, many times of, oh, well, sucks for them. And then it's different when it happens to you. And I've been exposed to it working with FEMA and working with emergency management and responding to stuff before where I've gone into the disaster zones and been the first responder and been the person that drops off the water and been the person that, you know, that helps people out. And then at the end of the day, I get in my car and I leave and I come back home, you know, or I go out of the disaster zone and everything's good. And it's, you know, it's surreal when it's your own and they're giving you firsthand knowledge and firsthand information of things that have gone wrong and things that are going on. It's, you know, it's going to be bad for a long time and we don't need to forget that.
Yeah. And you were bringing up a little bit there about, how our organization, CPN, helped the Cajun Navy, and we helped rescue a lot of people in the Carolinas, which, you know, I didn't make a lot of, I mean, I never really did a podcast on that, never really told a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, our leadership team and people like yourself and others and in our prepper community really stepped up, and we literally saved many people's lives during the Hurricane Florence. And there was a letdown when you shut your computer down. You kind of, there was a guilt because you knew that there were still rescues needing to go on. And I guess one of the reasons I didn't share that with a lot of people, I know one guy wrote an article about it, and I did post that just for our members to see, is because, I mean, I don't know. I didn't want to take advantage of a situation where our members stepped up and saved people's lives because people did die during that situation. You know what I mean? So I didn't feel like I should. I shouldn't toot our own horn for doing just a small part. Yeah.
Yeah, and we want to be modest. You know, the rescuers a lot of times are the people that are helping out. You know, they're modest. They go in there, they do what they got to do, and they turn it off. What I'm talking about is the people that, you know, you go in there and you either are helping somebody and then you leave, or you just see it on TV and it doesn't really connect to you that you are very close to being like that. So like here in Columbia, we have the Lake Murray Dam that's not far from where I'm at. If something ever happened to that lake, to that dam, it would literally kill, you know, hundreds of people and flood a lot of area. Now, the likelihood of that happening is very low, but, you know, people don't realize how very thin society is. There's a very, very thin veil that we call society, and it really doesn't take a whole lot for that veil to drop and for, you know, for our comfort level to go to zero. And so as preppers, even though we're in an area that maybe wasn't affected, I mean, I could have said, you know, well, hey guys, I'm praying for you. I hope everything turns out. Call me when you have some good news, and then turn on the TV, pop open a cold one, and not care about it. I could have done that because it didn't affect me. you know, truthfully, the storm didn't affect me at all. I had a little bit of wind come through. My power never went off. I never had a problem, and it didn't affect me. And I could have stayed in my little bubble and been perfectly fine and unbothered. But I also understand as a prepper that, you know, it doesn't take much for society to go tilt, and it could be anything. It could be an EMP. It could be a solar flare. It could be economic collapse. It could be something as simple as a glitch in the welfare system, or a glitch in the banking system, or a glitch in the credit card systems, where people can't they can't use their credit cards anymore for whatever reason, or that, you know, a cyber attack, whatever. It doesn't take much for people to get off kilter real quick, because if you don't have air conditioning and you don't have electricity and you don't have gas to put in your car, or your car doesn't crank, or you don't have money to buy things, you realize real quickly how much at the mercy of Mother Nature you are. And so the message for preppers is, you know, you need to, if you're on the fence about prepping, or if you think, well, I've got a few things, you need to get more, because you never know what risk is going to come down the pipe that could affect you or could affect a town near you. I mean, I got a nuclear plant not far from me. Truthfully, I'm not really worried about it, but if the nuclear plant had a problem, that could affect me, and so I've thought about it. There's a major petroleum LP gas station that's south of me about 10 miles that if that thing blew up, it might blow the windows out of my house, or it might, you know, cause my foundation to crack or something. So you really don't know what risk you have around you, and you really don't know how very precarious you are to animals until you get one of these kind of things that comes along.
Man, that's good stuff, Michael. That is just awesome. I am so glad
you should tune into my show, because this is my whole podcast. Most every show I do is about this kind of stuff. I don't sugarcoat it on my podcast.
Yeah. Hey, well, tell us about your podcast again, and how they can get up with you and follow you and that, yeah, because I'm sure people after this will go, I need to listen to this Michael Klein. He's real.
Yeah, so the show is called Reality Check. The name is, you know, because I think that people are going to get a reality check one day, or sometimes people get a reality check from life. And so my show is not about having food or water or communications. You know, I'm happy that you've got your water filter. I'm happy that you've got, you know, your 10 days or your 3 days worth of food. I'm happy that you bought your little Bayo thing and got it programmed up. Do you know what to do if you drop the Baofeng and it smashes? Do you know what to do if you are cooking your food and you actually get a third degree burn? Do you know what to do if your house burns down? Do you know what to do if somebody starts choking while you're bugged out? That kind of thing. The real world situations, the real things that people might not have thought about. That's kind of what I cover. And it's not all doom and gloom. There's sometimes I have some fun. One of the ones I did on, you know, is what do you do if you win the lottery? You know, How do you handle winning the lottery? I really could have used that show the other night, but that didn't happen. So that's my podcast.
I tuned in one night, and your wife was talking, and you and your wife were talking about death. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had to listen to that.
I mean, we cover how do you deal with a dead body, because as soon as someone dies, their body begins decomposing and they become a biohazard. You know, how do you deal with if someone's dead? How do you move the body? Because as soon as you touch it, you're going to bust a hole in it and it's going to leak out. You know, you're going to leak fluids everywhere. How do you deal with that kind of thing? Yeah, well, it's stuff that people are going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
In a grid down, it's going to be bad. And so that's kind of what my show is about. And like I said, the show is called Reality Check. The website is prepperbroadcasting.com. I'm on Friday nights. There's, I think, a live show every night now, but my show is on Friday nights. I'm at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you're on Facebook, you can look me up. You can either find Michael Klein, or the best way is to find Reality Check Studios. So if you look up Reality Check Studios on Facebook, the icon is a giant red rook. Am I still on?
Yep.
You still got
on.
Me?
Yep.
My computer went to sleep. I was freaking out.
Oh.
So you can find me on Facebook at Reality Check Studios. It's a giant red castle-looking icon, so you know you got it right. or my email address is michaelkline@hotmail.com. MichaelKline. The E and the A are reversed. So some people say Michelle, some people say Mikael. I don't know how they pronounce it, but anyway, my parents were weird. But it's MichaelKline@hotmail.com or live. I guess hotmail.com. So that's how you can get a hold of me.
And I know you were on a podcast last night. You're on one tonight, and then you're doing one on Friday night. So that's pretty awesome.
Well, no, I don't have one for Friday. I didn't have time to prepare a show. So we missed last Friday because we were packing up. I didn't have time to prepare a show for this Friday. So there'll be a repeat this show. So the 26th, there'll be a repeat. I think on November 2nd, I'll be doing either a pre-recorded show or I'll just have another broadcast. But I can guarantee you November the 9th, I will be live.
Awesome. Hey, Michael, once again, second or third time on my show. Can't remember. Maybe I can't think of anybody who's been on more. I think you've been on three times. I don't know. But anyway, thanks for coming on. I know you're one of the city leaders in Columbia. Yep, and you're awesome, and enjoy going down there and eating lunch with you when I have a chance. And hey, thanks a lot for being on the show and sharing the information that you observed and have learned from the hurricane. And you know, I'm going to say it. Don't hate me for it, but you know, we'll pray for your family down there. And sounds like you've taken care of them a little bit, but. We, you know, things are hopefully over time, things will get better and things will heal. And I know like one family member has already moved in with you. So that he's already, got a new start. So,
yeah, I can truly say that God is good and he does answer prayers. It may take very to the last minute and it may come right down to the wire, but it does happen. All but one person has gotten electricity that I know of. Everybody has at least got a roof over their head now and a place to sleep. My brother-in-law has moved in with me, and that's cool because we were wanting him to come up anyway to, you know, pretty much leave Florida and come up to South Carolina to start over. We just hated that this is the way it happened.
Took a hurricane to get him, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's doing good. God is absolutely great. He is with you. Being a Christian and knowing Jesus is a huge thing, because if you don't know that, then you don't have a hedge of protection over you. So if you know the Lord and you have Jesus in your heart, then you have an advantage, because then you have a hedge of protection that you can call down upon you that will literally protect you and your household from things like this. It's not going to say that you're not going to have bad luck, but,
dude,
odds are in your
favor. Amen,
man.
Preach it, man. I love that. That's awesome. That is absolutely true. I 100% agree. We are like-minded and more than prepping, for sure. So that was awesome. Hey, Michael, thank you for being on the show. And hey, everyone, join us at preppingacademy.com. Preppingacademy.com. Go and join our mailing list. And hey, we'll see you next time. You guys take care.
Have a great evening, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.